Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain, Bradley Burrows, and guests.
Welcome along, everyone. You are here on the NZ Tech Podcast. We are at episode 6.
Yay!
And this episode, you've got myself, Paul Spain.
You got Bradley Burrows.
And Jason Hosking.
Welcome along, Jason.
Welcome.
Nice to have you as a guest in the studio.
Good to be here.
Excellent. All right, guys, tonight we have quite a lineup of things to discuss. We're talking about an event happening in Las Vegas, kicking off tomorrow, called Mix. We're talking about digital books and making the transition to using digital books. We talk about tablets again this week, a little settlement that Sony have made this in the last few days. We talk about a new iPad app that's just launched. Some new server products coming through from Microsoft. Changes happening at Google. And Facebook with some activity in China. And then we finish up with some apps of the week. And there's a couple of other bits that we'll probably drop in there as well.
Some randomization.
As always. Mm-hmm. We like to be sort of random from time to time. So first up, the Mix event happening in Las Vegas. Sounds like quite an interesting event. Kicks off tomorrow for us.
Yeah, early in the morning.
But in the US, it's Tuesday morning, isn't it?
Yep, that's correct.
And it's an event that really covers web development, application development for mobile devices and platforms.
Yep, UI experts, all that sort of the surface-based technology. There's going to be some of that there. So yeah, there's a lot of the gaming guys are all going to be there this year. So it's a whole sort of mix of pulling everyone together, sort of the development platform.
So really, I guess the creative people that come up with all of these apps and user interfaces and things, along with the geeky coders that pull it all together technically.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, Microsoft's got a couple of guys up there that flew out of the country on Sunday. So if we can, we'll try and get a hold of those guys, even if we can do it via Messenger. And we'll see what's going on and see if we can get some scoops of what's happening over there and see what the feeling on the ground is.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there'll be a few new bits of pieces of information that will come out that we haven't heard about, you know, platforms like Windows Phone and so on. Certainly looking at last year, it was the Mix event last year where yep. really all the major sort of information was shared about Windows Phone 7, the upcoming launch. So I'm certainly hopeful that we'll hear a bit more about what's coming in the next version this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a heavy push on the development platform. I mean, they've broken 15,000 applications at the moment, and they're signing up 1,500 new developers a month. So, yeah, I can see there's going to be a real push around what the framework and how it's all going to work and the tools and all that sort of ecosystem that Apple's done really, really well, that Android is getting there with all their different sort of development platforms, if you like. But yeah, I can see that's going to be a big push this year.
Well, Microsoft, you know, one of their strengths is that they're great in terms of connecting with the software development community, giving them good tools, and then getting them inspired to jump in there. And we've seen that with Windows Phone 7 with a new platform, you know, just out of the gates, but there's already a lot of fantastic applications.
Yeah, there's a phenomenal amount of developers. And as we were talking earlier on this evening, I'm going to have a go at becoming a developer myself over the next couple of weeks, which everyone's laughing about hysterically at the moment. And yeah, well, hopefully we'll have a little announcement in a couple of weeks with some new apps that we can sort of share around here.
That would be fantastic. Good, good, good. Now, some sad news, some sad local news in the last few days is that DataSouth, which is one of the big technology service firms in the South Island, has shut its doors.
Yeah, it's no longer with us.
Yeah, really, really sad. I mean, they're a pretty major firm in Canterbury and the South Island in terms of running technology for a lot of businesses, advising them and so on. And quite a team there that's going to be out of work.
Yeah, they did some really, really amazing stuff just with using IT to solve some neat things around there. I remember reading, I had to do a bit of work with them to sort of review one of their submissions for the partner awards in that we run here. And basically what they'd done is they'd actually used a whole lot of Microsoft technologies with some Apple technologies to get a architecture firm to go green.
Cool.
And it meant that they were carbon neutral, but they were using technology to actually achieve this. And it was a really neat angle the way that they did it. Yeah, it was. There were some neat people down there. So, yeah, it's a real shame to see them go. I think, from what I've heard, there's a lot of the staff have gone off to other organisations, so they've got employment, which is good for Christchurch's with all the impact. But yeah, it's just a shame to lose an organisation like that. They were very cool.
Yeah. Oh well, we wish everyone involved the best, and you know, we know that there's going to be fallout anyway. Just the impact of the earthquake things impacting business, and you know, some businesses are, you know, coming out of the recessions. It's a tough time as well. So
Yeah, hope everything goes well down there. If you need anything, give us a yell. Just send us a Twitter message, and yeah, we'll see what we can do.
Now, digital books.
Yes.
Very, very interesting space at the moment. There's been a whole bunch of new devices coming out that allow you to read not on paper, right? So Amazon really, I guess, have led the way. Jason, you've been using various digital reading devices. Mm-hmm. What's your take? What are you using, and what do you like?
I'm trying a bit of everything actually, but there's so many. But the main ones for books at the moment would be the Kindle. I have a Kindle, and I also have it as an app on my iPad. The Kindle itself, the Amazon Kindle, you know, it's a bright sunny day. You can go and sit out in full sunshine. If anything, it even gets easier to read. With the iPad, it's just a nightmare trying to read on.
Yeah. In that sort of situation.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I found the Kindle was really nice. It's slim. It's a light device. In terms of, you know, book reading, it's great, but it's not so suited to, you know, anything else in terms of web and other types of content.
That's right.
Right.
But what's great about what Amazon has done is being able to access books instantly. And check out a sample chapter. There's something you think you might be interested in. You can just get a sample chapter sent to you.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
And most of the models, certainly the model I tried out and had for a while. I got it when I was in the States last year. Had the 3G capability in it, so as you say, you can get it instantly. And I was sitting in LA waiting for a bus, and I'm sitting there pulling down these books and things to look at and. It's just great. You couldn't, I would go to a bookshop or I'll go to the library. Just, well, actually, I just want to read something now. Boom, done. And the fact that you could use that 3G, mobile broadband access built into the device for no charge, that's quite revolutionary. No one's done that sort of thing before, right?
Yeah, so for me, I get all my magazines from the UK, and I get PC Pro, PC Advisor, there's a whole lot of hi-fi mags, and I used to get those shipped over. I used to have to wait the 6 or 7 weeks for it to come through, and it would arrive in the mailbox, and my wife would laugh at me as I ran down like a little 10-year-old school kid, and it was a good experience. But yeah, I mean, for me now, I've installed an application on my iPad, and all those magazine subscriptions come through digitally now, and for me that's been, I've already got the June issue of PC Pro. And for me, it's just been a great experience.
We're in April and you've got the June issue.
I know. They've already got the June issue out. It's incredible. But it was a really... I turned it on the other night. I said, oh, you've got a new magazine. Clicked on it, downloaded it. 10 minutes later, I had a full magazine in front of me. Could swipe. I could do everything on there. And I was just very, very impressed at the moment. I do miss the whole paper feel at the moment for some reason.
Yeah,
but
I can understand that. I mean, especially when you're getting magazines in from overseas and it is something special, you lose that. There's something nice about flicking through your magazine paper, especially when it's really visual type content and so on, and it's more than when it's more than just words. But I think that makes a difference. Do you find you read it as much?
Yeah, I do, definitely. I was talking to Jason just before, and one of the key things is that when I used to travel to, say, Seattle or Denver or something like that, I would have 7 or 8 magazines piled up in my laptop bag. And it would be like about 10 kilos. Yeah. And now I can just have everything on the iPad, or I can actually get it through a Windows device or an Android device. So now I'll be able to carry 30 subscriptions. I've got good content there to sort of read all the time. And, yeah, I've actually gone back a couple of times and reread articles, just focused on one or two things. I've put place points where I want to go through. So, so far I'm really enjoying it.
And so what's the application you were...
I knew you were going to ask me that, and you know what? It's just gone out of my head. I'll remember it.
Zinio?
Yeah, Zinio, that's it. Okay. Thank you, Zinio. And it's really good, because you can go through, it's not just IT magazines in there, there's sports, there's just everything.
There's food, wine, cooking.
Yep, photography. So you can go through, and I would definitely recommend having a look at it. I think I paid 48 New Zealand dollars for a month subscription. So
1 month subscription.
Sorry, a year subscription.
Yeah.
And so I get 12 magazines.
Mm, that's amazing. I have that as well. And, you know, National Geographic, Geo, it's a magazine produced in Germany. Really hard to get here on the shelves. You know, instantly downloaded and
that's fantastic. And obviously the different devices, there are the variations, like the screen and how well it works outside. So your iPad, it's not so good in bright sun, but probably not where you're going to read all the time. But there's a big difference in battery life too, right? What are you finding, Jason?
In terms of
the devices that you use, for instance, the Kindle, that's got really good battery life.
Kindle,
right?
Is incredible. Yeah.
Considering you've got this such a small light device.
Absolutely. Yeah, because they use e-ink and it's, you know, very low current draw, and it's if you turn the Wi-Fi off on that, you know, the battery will last you a month. So you could go away somewhere.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's take away to the batch for a couple of weeks. Yeah. Keep it going.
Or you're on the beach in Phuket, or you know, wherever in the world, and you just don't
for
even.
Those
you
of
don't
us
even
fortunate enough, Paul.
Yeah,
I'm not on the beach in Phuket. Not at the moment.
I actually haven't used a Kindle, so I'm sort of I've got a few questions. Does it do graphics? Is it all just text based?
It can do graphics, but primarily it's text based.
Okay. It's black and white, and the graphics aren't so crash hot. They sort of take you back to the graphics of sort of Mac Plus in the 80s, almost sort of that black and white pixelated without
retro.
Without
But you make it sound like saying that the text would be suck, but it's beautiful text. It's like looking at a printed page almost.
Hmm. Okay, I might have a look at that.
Mm.
But I'm enjoying going digital.
Because I don't read enough sort of books that suit it, I didn't hold on to my Kindle. But, you know, for you, Jace, that's something you use all the time, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Another thing great about these e-book readers is the ability to change typeface or the size of the text. So, you know, you've left your glasses at home and you can't read it. Just push a button and type gets bigger. It reformats on the fly. And
yep. Oh, that's good. Well, definitely I'm going to have a little bit more of a look at some of the other apps. So the key apps that you use, Jason, on your devices like the iPad, using the Kindle app?
Kindle, Zinio, and probably one of my favorite apps is called Instapaper.
Now, ooh, that's a little bit different, isn't it?
It is a bit different.
Tell us about Instapaper.
Instapaper is basically designed for busy people who, you know, you're on a website, you're scanning through, looking for information, and bang, you find something that may not be completely related to what you're looking for, but you want to read that. There's like a little applet that goes up into your...
it's in the browser window corner,
that's right,
isn't it?
Yeah. And you just hit that, and what Instapaper does is it strips out all the HTML, all the graphics, and it just gives you the pure text. So for people who commute, you know, you're taking a bus or train, ferry, you know, you can read that stuff later, and it's...
On the go,
Let me tell you, the Instapaper app on iPad... kicks ass over the Amazon app, and it's brilliant. Yeah. It's really good.
There are clients available for pretty much every platform. I know there's one for Windows Phone 7 that's just come out. That's not by them, but by someone else that ties into it. And their official apps definitely for iOS and so on.
The thing with this as well is you don't have to have an iPad. You can read it on a Mac, you can read it on a PC. It's kind of web-based. So, but if you do want, if you do have an iPad and you want the app, it's about $6.50.
That's not bad. Oh, I'd pay for that. It's actually quite interesting you mentioned that. For some reason, I don't know why I did this to myself today, as I was we were talking about the iPad devices, and I showed someone the old footage of the courier prototypes that Microsoft were designing a few years ago, and which was those dual LED screens. I actually do know someone that actually was on the test team of that particular product, so it did exist, it wasn't a mock-up.
Mm.
And they had that exact style where you could hook into a web page, select the text, and just drag it onto another application and then read it later. And yes, what could have been, eh? What could
it's
have
a
been?
Great concept, and I'm sure we'll see much, you know, more of those type of, you know, things coming through. But it's great to have a good app available. Now, there's some other apps that are quite interesting in terms of the way they pull content from different sources, and it's not, you know, exactly the same as sort of a, you know, an electronic book reader, but still quite interesting. There's Flipbook, a couple of other ones we've just been looking at on the one of the iPads here.
It's actually Flipboard.
Flipboard, is it? Oh, yeah. I always call it Flipbook, but it's Flipboard. It's there you go. I stand corrected once again. Jason, you've been using that a fair bit.
Yeah, I've just been playing around with it, and it's basically the way it works is you download the app, which is free. If you have a Google Reader account, you can put in the settings for that. You can have Facebook, Twitter. You can add all that stuff into it. And basically what it does is brings up little squares on the page. And
you tap on that,
and it basically goes searching on the different
all of those sources
blogs
that you've linked in. So if you've linked in, you know, some Twitter accounts of photographers that you know, you've linked into some blogs, you've linked into all these sources, it's pulling out sort of the what it picks as the most freshest relevant content.
Yeah, basically whatever's the latest tweet. But the way it does it is it compiles it into a format that is almost like reading a newspaper. It's quite beautiful.
It is, and that's one of the things that stood out to it when I first looked at it, is it's really stylish. So you've got all these sources, and some websites their layouts aren't very good, their typefaces are a bit you know, their graphics aren't very well done, but this lays it out like a really professional magazine, all of the different bits and pieces of content. It's extremely good.
Yeah, I mean, Jace was just showing me just now, I mean, it's got the full swipe, it's got the page turns. And if that's coming in as an RSS feeds from different things, that's a very, very slick way of pulling everything together. I know places like, you know, like Google, like MSN, have tried to have that portal where you get your own content. It's almost like your own personalised version as an app now, isn't it? Pulling
it through. Yeah, well, this takes those portals that are personalised to a whole new level, and it doesn't, you know, just draw from the web, which those have done traditionally.
Yeah.
Sure, the content is all off from the web in some format, but the way that it looks at your various social mediums that you use, like Twitter and so on, and then draws all the content in from those sources, it's fantastic.
Mm. So that app is free.
That's right.
So how do they make money? Is it advertising? Do you get advertising when you go through it? How does it work?
That's a very good question. Whether they have plans to advertise in the future, I don't know. At the moment, there is no advertising in there.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is fantastic.
I guess it's one of these common things in the age we're in, where people will launch, companies will come up with this next great idea. They'll launch it. They don't necessarily even have in mind how they're going to make money. But if they draw a big audience, then at some stage they work out a way to commercialize it. As we've seen with platforms like Twitter and Facebook and so on, as they go along, they soon work out a way to commercialize it if you've got millions of eyeballs looking at your product or your app or your website.
Mm.
There's always a way. Good. All right, well, let's keep moving. Next on the list, we've got new tablets. Now, I hear just actually picking up the Harvey Norman catalogue this weekend, interestingly enough.
The leading IT publication in New Zealand.
I know. The news that was in there, I did not know that locally Acer's new tablets are going to be launched. I heard they come out internationally, that Acer have a new Honeycomb tablet that's just launched overseas.
They have a new logo as well, too. I saw
they
that
do,
today.
New Acer logo.
Yep.
So, that's coming out here within the next maybe week or two from what they're saying. I will see if we can get hold of one of those to chat about over the next little while. So we'll keep you in the loop on that. And Acer also launching Windows-based tablets as well as the Android Honeycomb one. So that'll be very interesting to see. And I'm keen just to see how slick and smooth and how well it works. The last Android tablet that we had our hands on was great. It was really nice from that user perspective.
The Frodo version, wasn't it? 2.2.
Yeah, that's right. Still, obviously, those sort of security concerns floating around, and not something that that I'll be letting too near our business network. But in terms of a personal. Yeah, personal device, definitely keen to have a look and see how it's going. I'm still reading a few reports about stability of the Honeycomb release, so there might be a little bit of work that they've got to, you know, Google have got to do there to smooth off the edges and get it really running sweetly.
But it's nice to get some devices, though, that we can actually start seeing, you know, these things mature really fast. So, it's just nice to get some stuff we can get our hands on, have a play with, and see how it compares. I mean, the iPad's the benchmark that everyone's trying to get to at the moment, so... Yeah, let's see where Honeycomb goes, and hopefully the devices match what the iPad 2 and iPad 1 is.
Hmm. Now, Sony had a little bit of trouble last week, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
There were those denial-of-service attacks on their
PlayStation
Network. Not good. Well, interestingly, and I believe unrelated, but Sony had gone after a chap by the name of George Hotz, is it? How do you pronounce it? I think that's about right. Skip's nodding, so and Skip is a man that knows all. Or Geo Hotz, as was his sort of internet handle. He had hacked the PS3 and worked out how to put pirated games on it and done some naughty bits and pieces in there.
So like the old PS2, which everyone used to hack and everything, he's done the same thing with the PS3?
Apparently so. And Sony weren't too happy and were litigating, shall we say, and spending some big dollars. Apparently he ran off to South America, I read a couple of weeks ago.
How much was this guy doing? My God.
But apparently it's all been settled and everyone's happy. So the exact details of it, it's a little bit hard to know. But if you're interested in that, then there's plenty more details online.
He must have been doing something very naughty to have Sony, or maybe they were just trying to make a statement that not to do it.
I think so, and if you look at the gaming platforms, if people are able to pirate the software and not buy the discs, then your audience is the younger segment of the market who don't tend to have so much disposable income. So if there's a way to get around the copyright and copy the games, then everybody will give it a go, and so it's understandable that Sony are. And not keen to encourage it.
Yeah. I remember, and Skip would be able to confirm this for me, the Xbox update they did about a year ago, maybe a year and a half, where all the Xbox 360s that had been chipped or pirated with software hacks, that one of the updates completely locked. So I think it was about 10 million Xboxes out of the Xbox.
It wasn't 10 million, but it was a lot.
Skip sort of his hands in the ears going up.
Yeah, it was a lot of users that were locked out, and people were told that if you break the rules, then that's what's going to happen. Yeah. So people knew up front, and those that sort of we'll try it on, then they ended up with an Xbox that wasn't much more useful than a brick.
Yeah,
so
it was a DVD player, but it's interesting that people they're actually
bit of a pity, eh?
It is. I mean, like the PlayStation 2 and the old Xbox, I think everyone, they got hacked all over the show. The later platforms, you can still do it, but it's a little bit harder now. Mm.
Now, a new app for the iPad that just came out in the last day or so that's been getting a bit of attention, even covered by the New Zealand Herald, which is it's fairly unusual for them to talk about anything from this particular software company, namely Microsoft.
Yes, they're quite sort of anti-Microsoft, those guys.
Or so it appears.
Yes, anything to do with Apple they love, anything to do with Microsoft they tend to sort of poo-poo. So.
Funny. So this Bing app, we were just having a look in the app store, the US one, so you have to have a US subscription to get it at the moment because it's tweaked for the US market, which tends to be the focus of Bing at the moment. They're trying to win a lot of market share in the States, and they seem to be doing reasonably well against Google in that space.
They're creeping up there slowly.
But looking at the app, they'd already been rated 15,000. It had been rated 15,000 times in whatever the last 24, 48 hours.
Five stars.
And it was sitting pretty much on five stars, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And we had a play with it earlier on, just on Jason's laptop, on his iPad, just to get it going. And definitely, I think the geo-locking on that was sort of trying, it was holding us back.
There was something a little bit odd going on, wasn't there?
Yeah, but I had a go of a friend's iPad today, which actually had a US account, which was fully working, and yeah, look, it really blew me away. I mean, the two.
So, what does the Bing app do? What's it for?
Well, obviously, it's a basic search app, so you can do your searching. But what it does is it brings up all down the bottom. You've got like a ribbon interface which you can slide along. It aggregates again all your news, stocks, sports stuff, all that down there that you can just click on. It'll give you instant access to what's going on there. But one of the things I really liked was actually the Bing Maps. It worked. And it was great. I'm walking around the office with the Bing Maps thing. So, look, it's very similar to Google. You've got that top-down look, but as you go down, it automatically zooms into sort of that street view that Bing has. And it was suddenly doing all the navigation. I could walk. It worked out via GPS exactly where I was standing. I could always pivot around on what I'm doing. I was walked up Queen Street to the Sky Tower, zoomed up to the top of the Sky Tower. It was a really fluid app. It worked really, really well. And I was able to swipe like pages on a book back and forth of what the content was doing. So, and yeah, it was just a really slick application. And obviously, the guys at Microsoft have done a lot of work to actually get iPad apps working, because they're actually doing a lot of iPhone and iPad apps at the moment, which is, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
And we must be doing something right for a 5-star rating
on Apple.
Yeah. What, 150,000? Something ridiculous. It was a lot of five stars.
Yeah. No, that was good. I look forward to those sort of apps, more of those apps becoming available in New Zealand. And I guess that's one of our frustrations here, is there's a bunch of things coming through that are very US-centric and aren't available here. And, of course, there are always little tricks you can do to get around it. But it'll be great when New Zealand's, you know, important enough or, you know, easy enough to cover with those apps. But, you know, great to see that with that Bing one that at least they've got the content for New Zealand and they are able to deliver it, maybe at not the level that they're aiming for, but still at a pretty good level if you've got the US account and you're able to get that onto your iPad. So, yeah, I'll definitely be having a look at that one. All right, well, we've got another, actually, Microsoft thing on the agenda as well. Windows Home Server 2011, that's just been finalised, hasn't it?
Yep, that's definitely.
And there's two other sort of associated products. There's a new Windows Small Business Server Essentials 2011 and the Storage Server 2011 as well. Probably the latter two are much more business-oriented, so we won't dive so much into those releases at the moment. But in terms of in a home environment, the home server, where would that fit? You know, for instance, you know, Jace, you've got a really Mac oriented home in terms of you've got your MacBook Pro, you've got your iPad, you've got your iPhone, whatever else plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
My environment's a bit more of a mix between, you know, Mac and Windows. Your environment's probably similar. How would a device like that work for us?
So I've actually got about 5 of the original home servers running in my house at the moment. Don't laugh, Skip.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you've I've got
fives.
Yeah.
How many servers have you got in total?
I've got a small data center in my house at the moment. Yeah, okay. Sorry. I've got about 10 servers.
Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that for our listeners who thought that maybe Brad's home was just the same as everyone else's. Look,
I built mine. I just happened to put a little data center type thing in there. So. So they've got this, the new small business server family coming out. The home server is really the next version. Is designed where you can have it sitting there. It's supposed to be a Whisper-based appliance. It's really, really quiet. You install a bit of client software on Mac or Windows-based devices, and it automatically starts doing backups of your devices. It gives you access to be able to put your photos, your videos. It allows you to store files on it. But the neat thing is that they've natively built in all the Mac support now straight into Windows Home Server 2011, whereas before it was only the HP-based devices. And these devices also allow you to do streaming, so you can actually push your video files off the media server. So you can sit there with, in the old days it used to be Twonky, I think was the client application, so the software application.
So it was a bit complicated to
it
do
was.
That
it was
stuff
a bit
in the past,
convoluted,
right?
Convoluted, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas it's now designed just to be sort of a plug-and-play thing
and
that any
goes.
Home user can just plug in. you install this, you know, bit of software on your machine, yep, and you're up and running, you know that your Mac or your PC or whatever it is just going to get backed up, so you don't have that panic of, oh, yep, you know, your hard drive crashes on your laptop while you're away on holiday, and you know, I've lost my last 5 years worth of photos, or you know, those sort of scenarios.
And I've actually done a couple of tests to see. I borrowed a friend's Mac and we backed it, and we wiped it and restored it, and we've done the Windows based devices. But yeah, it's just a simple way. My wife has the client on her laptop, and basically she can sit there, put the camera onto the laptop, drags all the photos onto the home server. It also has a web server built in, so you can publish those, so the family can see all the websites. It uses Silverlight, so you can actually get a nice rich sort of thumbnails and film strips and everything else going on. Yeah, and it's just a really, really easy way to pull all that music and video and picture content, and also have your devices backed up. So that's come out, and then obviously Small Business Server Essentials has just come live as well.
And that sort of sits between the home server product,
yep,
which can have up to what, 10 PCs,
correct,
or Macs linked
10
into
devices,
it?
10 devices.
So you have up to 10 things hooked into it. And the kind of the mid-range Small Business Server product that a lot of small businesses in New Zealand have been using over the last sort of, you know, 10+ years to run their networks.
Yeah,
It's aimed at the sort of slightly smaller end, isn't it?
It's 1 to 25. Thing? Yeah, 1 to 25. I mean, I call it the hybrid server. So traditionally, you had Small Business Server, which was your on-premise. So you had all your big heavy lifting email, SharePoint, all those type of applications running on-premise. Now with the Small Business Server Essentials, one of the cool things is that you can still log into it, you can still have file and print, but things like email, SharePoint, Link, which is OCS, so all your presence awareness, CRM, is all going to actually buy it through a dashboard, and it actually pulls it through. So
you've basically got a very simple server product, and if you want all these fancy other tools and
the heavy
so
lifting
on,
stuff,
you know, you want email or you know, client relationship management, those things, then you buy those separately from a hosted server, so you don't have to have them sitting on your premises.
Correct, and it all brings it through the Small Business Server Essentials, so
ties it together.
So you can own your Mac, your Windows device, whatever, and you can log into the Small Business Server Essentials, and you'll open up your Outlook or your Entourage, whatever the email client is, it pulls it all down, but that's actually going through the Essential server. And I've seen some of these little Essential servers, and they're tiny little cubes, absolutely tiny, 2 rated SSD drives in them, and that is minute. And then, it's just designed to be a very simple 1 to 25 user business, which,
great,
to be honest, there's a lot of New Zealanders that are that size.
Great. Oh, it's going to be interesting to see what products land here in New Zealand and you know, where they fit.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, most businesses have already got something in place, so, you know, there'll be a mix of businesses in terms of who will be looking at this, maybe new businesses or ones that don't have a server yet and so on.
Yeah.
Looking forward to
very interesting
coming through.
Lots of fun reviewing that one.
Good. Now, just want to move into a slightly different topic now. Jason, having you here is great. Your day job, what you do, you're a professional photographer. Your photos are available through the big photo libraries like Getty Images and so on. So you're out there shooting these fancy things. What's the gear that you, what gear do you use for that?
Myself, personally, I use Nikon. I have a D3S.
Okay.
It's a pretty heavy-duty DSLR camera.
That's pretty high-end equipment, isn't it? It's, you know, the digital SLR camera that I've got is the sort of the consumer type, you know, $1,000 camera. But the sort of level you're talking at, it's a much higher-end equipment, isn't it? It's truly professional level gear, right?
Yeah. I mean, you pay extra money for features. You know, you go outside in a dust storm or a torrential downfall, and you know, you're pretty guaranteed that nothing's going to happen to it.
Awesome.
You know, you're pretty safe. You know, you can up to 11 frames a second shooting. It's a professional camera, so it's designed for intensive daily use, where your camera may not be. But
no, certainly not. No.
Not like portraits equipment. and sort of, I mean, for a layman, I'm not a photographer person. So my sort of two key things are sort of what's the megapixel size, and then also what size memory stick do you stick in that damn thing?
What's the megapixel size of my camera?
Yeah, or, yeah. Is it like a 12 megapixel?
It's 12, yeah.
And so how does that relate to, you know, because obviously you can get phones now that do 12 megapixel. What's the difference between, you know, a camera that's $5,000 or $10,000 that does 12 megapixel and what's in a phone? What's the thing that,
why,
that makes it
why
makes
is
it
your
so
camera
different?
Better than Skip's iPhone?
Well, I could probably give you 100 reasons for that.
I'm asking myself the same question. You know, why do they pay so much for this thing? You know, it's built for professional use, so it'll take a knock. You know, my camera, I was up in a hide photographing some birds. My camera basically took a fall from, I was about 20 feet up in a scaffold, watched it bounce down.
Wow.
Cried.
You know, just about, I was like, my mouth just dropped to my feet and, you know, my brain engaged and I went down, picked it up. It was fine.
Wow. That's cool. But the lens technology is kind of the differentiator, isn't it, in terms of what the picture? I mean, there's so much differences in the lens capabilities, isn't there, in terms of how much light comes in and so on, compared to a phone, right? There's got to be, I mean, it can...
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Interchangeable lenses, you know, you know, proper professional grade lens is full of glass. It's very heavy and you're going to get, you know, beautifully sharp images. But at the same time, you know, it's a thing like an iPhone or a Windows phone, anything with a camera, you know, I don't discount those things. Those things are great for having in your pocket and, you know, you see something, you can take a snap of it instantly. You might see something going on around you. You pull out that big Nikon, people are going to freeze up and start acting awkward. But, you know, with your little camera phone,
people can be a bit lot more relaxed and so on. And yeah. I guess, you know, we look at some of the recent news and good things point. That's gone on. You know, we've obviously had some natural disasters around the world. We've had, you know, happenings in the Middle East in terms of regime change and so on. There's a lot of information that's able to get out very quickly about these things because people are carrying, you know, smartphones and various devices with them where they can grab a bit of footage, grab some stills and get that online quickly. And you might be watching the news tonight and actually seeing footage that, you know, someone just happened to be in the right place at the right time and they've caught it on their phone.
Yeah.
So how do you, so you're out up on the scaffolding, you're doing your photographs, you've got your big camera there, you plug that into one of your MacBook Airs or one of your Apple devices, you do the manipulation of the photo there and then, or do you take it back to the studio to work on it? How does it sort of work?
What's the process? I tend to, I'll fill up my cards and I'll have, you know, half a dozen of those. And as I go through, you know, I'll put them away so I don't record over them. At the end of the day, you know, I'll come back, I'll download those onto, I have an external hard drive. A bank of them, you know, 1 terabyte drives.
Home server would be good for that.
Brad's doing put his Microsoft hat on just for a moment to do a quick sell job on Jason. I'm just trying to judge whether Jason's buying it.
It works.
He looks still undecided. So
I'm happy to see a demonstration.
Come over to my house, I'll show you.
And all the listeners are invited as well.
Yeah, oh,
sorry, Brad. Sorry about that, Jason. I rudely interrupted.
I forgot where
we were at. So there's quite a setup required for you to go in and edit these photos. It's a pretty major job, right? You've got some, you know, some software tools that are at a professional level. You're not using the same
available
bits and pieces
to
that we use.
Yeah, sure. You can. Everybody can get the software. It's, you know, whether you want to pay for it or not.
And it comes down to the skill of knowing how to use it, and there's an artistic sort of element to that and so on. It's not something where I can imagine myself diving into Adobe Aperture or et cetera and trying to figure out what to do. Is that one of the tools, right?
Adobe Lightroom. I think Aperture is the Mac.
Oh, sheesh, I get mixed up with these things all the time.
MS Paint, that is one of the best applications ever.
Yeah, thanks for that.
You know, a really exciting thing that has been happening with DSLR cameras now is the ability to record motion. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with House.
Oh, yeah, here's the TV show.
Yeah.
Last year, the season finale of House was filmed entirely with Canon 5D HD DSLRs.
That's just the still photographer's camera has the ability. The film capability in it.
Or
the,
that's right.
Wow.
They were just trying to prove a point that it could be done, I suppose.
And it can be.
Yeah.
Like, they'd obviously done the test to see what can be done. The same effects that you can get with a still camera, you know, the shallow depth of field, the soft out-of-focus backgrounds, that beautiful... You know, you can do that with these things, and you can get into tight little spaces. Lucasfilms have been running tests with these things.
That's great. And there's even, like, I think some of the people I've chatted to have been using them for doing music videos, locally here in New Zealand as well.
Actually, sorry, you just reminded me. I just read something before we came into the studio tonight, is that Peter Jackson's just done an update on his blog, on his Facebook site, to say they're recording The Hobbit at 48 frames a second, which means it's going to be one of the first production films in the world to have this super crisp 3D high-speed cameras being used to record a movie. So he's actually going down that similar path of actually having that crisp user experience. It's going to future-proof it, was his word. So yeah, no, it's
they're using the awesome. The new Red cameras, yeah. Aren't they? The latest equipment from Red, is that
wow.
Right?
Wow, love one of those.
That technology just sounds phenomenal. They've just taken a fresh look at it and have come out with something that... Yeah, there's all these companies that have been specialists in the field of cinema cameras and so on for a long time, and then these guys have come along and just aced it with absolutely incredible technology.
Hmm.
Well, it's very nice that Peter Jackson gets to play with it.
Yeah. Mr. Jackson, or Sir Peter Jackson.
Yes, if you're listening, Sir Peter.
We'd love to have you on the show. We really would.
And we'd like to have a play around with the tech, so let us know. All right, next on the list, Google. There's been a few changes going on there in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
CEO has changed.
Yep. They've also got more antitrust against them now by the EU. What else has been going on? I'm just trying to think. I was reading about this all the other day. So Microsoft's gone on board with the EU, which is kind of ironic when considering the EU has been going after Microsoft for the last 10 years. So now Microsoft's probably the most experienced antitrust people in the world. They've pitched in for search to do with not being able to search accurately YouTube accounts. So YouTube videos. So only Google at the moment has 100% access to be able to search all the metadata, all that information where you put in family, friend, and pig or something. And
so it means that the apps that Microsoft are producing that would, you know, look at the available videos aren't able to deliver as good results.
Yeah, 20%. And it's not just Microsoft. It's all the other smaller search providers have actually banded together. The Microsoft obviously is the biggest brand out of all the smaller ones, so that's what the media's got a hold of. But yeah, they're only getting access to about 20 to 25% of all the YouTube information to be able to get accurate searches. So yeah, but
it's interesting. And the other thing going on with Google is they're really trying to make a big play into the social media space at the moment, and understand that they're actually going to be rewarding their staff based on success in that field. I guess they feel pretty intimidated by the success of Facebook, which is now a more popular site than there's more time spent on Facebook now than there is on Google. So Facebook is sort of becoming the new place to be online, as it has been for some time, but for searches and so on as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, Google Wave was a big disaster, and that was one of the big... I mean, it's the first time Google actually had a failure in one of their big products, if you like.
Yeah,
so.
And I guess every software vendor has that, right?
Yeah.
And everyone's tried something that's kind of tanked, but that was one where...
First time they tasted a bit of sort of, something didn't quite work. Since then, they've definitely trying to be playing catch-up with Facebook.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, Facebook have just announced, or there's word of a bit of a deal in China for Facebook with the big search engine there. Which is, can anyone pronounce it? It's Baidu. Is it Baidu?
Baidu.
Yeah. Yep. So apparently they're teaming up to do some sort of a Chinese version of Facebook. Now, Facebook is banned in China at the moment.
Yep.
As I recall from when we visited there last year, But you know, a lot of the people there have you know, got a VPN access. Like, we have a VPN to get into the States to view American video content. The Chinese have VPN access out to get onto Facebook, Twitter, and these various other things that are you know, blocked by the Great Firewall of China, as they call it. But it'll be very interesting if these guys can actually pull off an equivalent thing that's Chinese based.
Yeah, look, I mean, I used to, when I worked in the UK for Microsoft in the UK, I did some work with MSN for a little while there, and when MSN.co.uk and all those sort of the portals were looking to go into China, you cannot have your data center outside China. So Facebook are going to have to build all that infrastructure in China to actually get up and going. That's the same thing with Google. That's why they pulled out of China. Then they sort of got into a bit of hissy fit with the Chinese government there for a little while. But yeah, now Facebook's going to have to set up its own presence. It's going to have to be a standalone environment, I'd say. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how long and sort of how much energy they're going to put in. But it's a big market to get into. I mean, the search providers over there, some of them are bigger than Google in some respects and what they're doing, because there's the amount of people over there that use them all. It's a different world. We're just not exposed to it down here.
Well, Google are they're the number two player, aren't they, in search in China?
Yes, they're number two, not number one.
Yeah, which is unusual. There's not many markets in the world that's the case. All right, so now it's time to announce the winner of last week's competition, which was to do with IPv5, whatever that may be.
Where did it go?
We were trying to wonder why there was IPv4, IPv6. Well, we got the closest response, in fact, the only response on this, because they're... I'm not sure that there actually is a perfect answer to it, so sorry for throwing out such a hard one. But we're going to give the prize to... Now, forgive me if I get the name slightly wrong, but Yugen Yugaraja, he tweeted us with an answer, and we'll retweet that for anyone that wants to look into it. But it's the closest info that came back about why IPv5 was skipped.
Yep, I've got a web camera under my desk. We'll get your address off you somehow, and we'll get it couriered down to you.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's great. Well, I think we're out of time. We've got a whole bunch of exciting stuff coming up for next week. We'll talk about what came out of the Mix conference. There are some apps of the week that we didn't get to cover this week, so we'll dive into those.
Yep.
And if you'd like to look us up, of course, we're online, nztechpodcast.com. Now, the individuals that are here tonight, we've got Jason Hosking. You are jasonhosking.com. You're on Twitter as well.
I'm not tweeting much at the moment.
Not tweeting much, but what's your... Are you just...
Jason Hosking.
Jason Hosking. Cool. And Brad, you're...
At Brad Bohr. That's my Twitter and my blog. Just go to nztechpodcast.com. My blog site's linked off there. Go
excellent.
The easiest way.
And the same for me, at Paul Spain on Twitter, and you can find a link to my blogs and so on from the nztechpodcast.com website. And our Twitter info and everything else.
Next week's show is going to be big. There's a lot of stuff that Paul and I that's going on at the moment, and we're going to have a big show next week with some announcements.
Really looking forward to it. All right, thanks everyone for listening in. Until next time, this has been the NZ Tech Podcast. Cheers.
See ya.